I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome, everybody, to another lesson of Soul School. This is lesson 25, Why You Are Craving Stability. So I've been talking a lot about rebirth, and as you enter into a time or a season of questioning or just a new season in life, things start to shift and change. And as rebirth happens and new life happens, this is, of course, followed by a stage or a season of growth, sometimes rapid growth and sometimes just slow, steady growth. But all growth is, of course, change, and all change is basically unsettling. And that might come as no surprise, but what happens to us during times of being unsettled is that we feel really uncomfortable and we search for ways to stabilize ourselves just unconsciously. And so this might be a time for you just like that. And it helps to know that as a human, this will be an uncomfortable but normal thing. And it's such an uncomfortable thing that most people don't see growth all the way through. It goes in fits and starts and stops. And some people just quit. Some people relent. Some get distracted or lose interest. And a lot of people just revert back. And so it's a two steps forward, one step back kind of thing, or even two steps back. And two steps forward, two steps back. I want to talk a little bit today about how you can see more steady growth, still have some stability, but maybe stability from a different source than what you're used to by just unconsciously or gaining stability in unconscious ways instead of conscious ways. So if you continue to grow and change and you stay on a path of growth and change and rebirth, you'll start having a craving for stability, and it'll come out in usually some typical ways. But before I tell you what those ways are, let me tell you more of why. Because a lot of times when we know the why of something, we not only have a deeper level of self-compassion, but we can make accommodations for ourselves and put things in place that will sort of mitigate our shortcomings. And as humans, I say shortcomings not in a problematic way, like, oh, we're just stupid humans who do stupid things. But in the sense of like, I know I'm going to be set up for a fall in certain areas, and that's fine. And it's not a problem. It's just something I have to look out for. And in that way, we can say, this is actually not a big deal. This is normal. So I'm just going to look out for this. And when it comes along, I'm just not going to be very surprised. I'm just going to say, just going to tackle it when it gets here. You don't have to beat yourself up for slipping and falling down. Just like a baby doesn't have to beat itself up for when it's learning to walk. If it trips and falls when it's learning to walk, nobody says to the baby, you're such an idiot. Why can't you walk yet? What's wrong with you? You know, we're all learning how to walk and how to run. And none of us has it figured out. I certainly don't. And none of us really can be arrogant enough to say we're perfect. We're just humans trying to make it through, trying to do right in the world. Most of us, hopefully. And so we don't have it figured out, but we're trying our best along the way, and we're going to fall along the way. And sometimes just knowing why and the background for why we're made up the way we are in our brains and in our human makeup can really go a long way for settling problems before they even start. That's kind of why I like to take sometimes not just a spiritual approach and look at wisdom literature and the Bible and other ways to look at ourselves, but also look at scientific studies too, and neuroscience, and find out what people who are researching the human experience, what are they learning about people as they study many people in case studies? What are they learning about what people tend to do? Because I think that really does help us out. So we know that the human experience is full of change and flux. And this has always been true as long as there have been humans. There have been dangers in our world that we've tried to mitigate with our intelligence and with creating things and being imaginative. We're humans that don't have like a exoskeleton to protect us or anything like that, and we don't have like porcupine spikes to protect us, so we have to think in different ways to protect ourselves. What we wind up doing as human beings is really looking for homeostasis and ways to keep everything balanced. Even our bodies try to keep our temperature the same and try to keep, if our environment is one way, we try to maintain stability in our environment. We try to maintain stability in our relationships. We're very on guard to see that things don't go too much in one direction or another. And we see big changes in our environment as threats. We'll see them sometimes unconsciously, but we'll still, our body will still react and we'll still get anxious, or our heart rate will go up, or if something happens in our environment that's drastically different or even subtly different, we'll usually respond in a way, sometimes even unconsciously, in our body. You can see this in your own marriage or friendships. I like to say that no two people can go crazy at the same time. In my marriage, it just seems like if one of us is having a really hard day, the other person will rise to the occasion. And also, if they're having a bad day, they will just sort of balance the other one out. My husband will balance out my day if I've had a horrible day, or the other way around. And it's almost like there's this unwritten rule or this unspoken thing that we know we have to maintain balance somehow in our home, in our relationship. And it doesn't happen that both of us sort of go crazy at the same time. Now, we've never talked about it. We've never decided, hey, let's never go both crazy at the same time. But if he's had a horrible, lousy day, I try to put my things aside and I try to buoy him up. And the same goes the other way. And I think that it's because of this unconscious desire for stability and homeostasis. We try to create that in our environments, and that's kind of what's going on there. So that's just by way of example of kind of understanding. I think humans just crave and desire stability. It plays out in so many different ways. We're social creatures, and we're going to go to tribes that accept us. This will often create problems if the tribes that have been accepting of us and have welcomed us to them, if we start questioning things within the tribe, we can get ostracized from the tribe. So I'll go into a little more detail in a minute. But because humans are so social, when there's instability in our lives, we often first go to socially stable relationships or tribes that will help us during crises. So let's say if someone in our family is sick, we often will seek the support of friendships to help us through emotionally, financially, helping with all kinds of things that will help us out. We might have a church family that will provide support. We might have extended family members or neighbors that will help us. And we are tribal in social ways. And all of us have people that are our tribe members. So maybe we love to write, and so we're part of a writer's group. Or maybe we like to cycle, and so we have a cycling group. Or there could be so many ways that we have different friend groups or tribe groups, in groups that we associate with that are part of our support system, our social support system. But there are ways that we can grow and change where the very people that we're close to, we go from being insiders to being outsiders. And that actual social support system can go under threat because we can be afraid to speak about things that would go against the group. So we feel very destabilized, and we seek different tribes then to make us feel more comforted. And knowing that we're very social and that we're going to seek a tribe that's not that tribe is good to know ahead of time. If we're going to feel destabilized by deconstructing certain beliefs and questioning certain things in our lives, we have to know that we're social creatures that are going to create stability. And if we can't find them in those social groups, we're going to go elsewhere for them. But it's also good to know that just because we might be questioning some beliefs that our group holds dear, we don't have to cast off the tribe. It doesn't have to work like that, but that is what happens a lot of times for people. They might be questioning certain beliefs their tribe holds dear and then say, well, I guess I can't be part of this tribe because they're just not going to accept me, and they cut ties. But really, we actually agree on so much more than we disagree. And I don't think that cutting ties with our social group that we're tight-knit with is actually the answer. Most of the time we sever ties we don't need to sever. And so if you're craving stability in that way, you might be able to find stability in other ways. And here are some of the ways you could do that. A lot of people find solace and are finding solace by drawing on ancient practices and wisdom texts steeped in history and tradition. And that's simply because these are rich traditions that have lasted the test of time. And by drawing on those, you're not drawing from what seems unstable in what is around you and what is in the present moment and in your present time. You're drawing on things that have stood the test of time, and it's a deep well to draw from. So some people, that's why some people are going back to the liturgical calendar. There's these feast days, they occur in the same points of the year, each year, and people all over the world celebrate them. You can join with others, and whatever's happening in your social surroundings or in your church group may or may not celebrate them, that's fine, but you can kind of draw from this ancient tradition and you can pull them in now to your life and know that other people are along with you, and it's kind of like creating a new tribe of sorts. So people find stability in that even when they are at the same time questioning their beliefs in other ways. So that's kind of an interesting way to create stability without having to sever any ties whatsoever, or it's mitigating instability in other ways. And other times, there's ways to mitigate instability by just simply embracing the unknown and mystery and uncertainty in a completely new way that you've never done before. And in a way, this is part of the maturation process as you're a human being and as you're maturing and seeing ways to believe and understand the world in a new way. You're really just admitting that you don't have all the answers that you thought you did. And that's not so strange. It's just growth. It doesn't mean you'll never land anywhere. It may be that you come to see that settling on something immediately just to feel better isn't something you must do, because now you know why you have to do that so quickly. You know that as a human being, you're going to crave stability and you're going to crave latching onto something or latching onto some group really quickly. You're going to crave that. Since you know that you're going to do that, you don't have to find your bearings so quickly. You don't have to panic and quick find your bearings and settle down into something. You know, hey, I have time. I'm a social creature and I'm going to yearn and crave stability immediately. But since I know that I'm like that, I can back off and breathe and wait and find my bearings in due time. And other times people do find new tribes. The tribes of people who are also on a journey of understanding things in a new way, and they find solace on their journey during the times of instability, and you might find that too. I'm going to have some guys on my podcast soon, the Deconstructivists, Adam Nerlock and John Williamson, and they are in the process of creating a tribe for just people doing that, deconstructing their world, but not doing it alone. And I think that's a really helpful way of seeing things, that you can deconstruct things and then reconstruct them, but you don't have to be alone while you're doing it. I like the idea of what they're up to, and I'm excited to have them on the show pretty soon. We have to remember that we differ on so many things that are far less than we think. We have to look for common ground. The common ground is always there, and our core needs as humans remain the same no matter what we're thinking about. We can make allowances for each other no matter what we're going through. So if you're deconstructing things in your life, keep in mind that this happens all the time. People deconstruct and then reconstruct. They deconstruct and they reconstruct. And it's a normal process of being human. It doesn't matter which faith tradition you come from. If you're an atheist, if you're Jewish, if you're Muslim, you'll have periods of deconstruction and reconstruction. And that's just part of natural human growth, unless you're so isolated that you've never seen any other influences in your life from outside sources. Remember that the deconstructing part of your brain happens in the prefrontal cortex of your brain, where it's the reasoning part that deconstructs and takes in new data. But the connecting part of your brain happens in a totally different section of your brain. The social connecting part happens in a different section. So it's important to incorporate both parts of your brain and reconnect with people socially. Recall why you've enjoyed being with these people. Recall the good times you've had together. Reconnect socially with people so you're not just constantly deconstructing. Because it's those social connections that make us fully human. It's not just the deconstructing. And we can get stuck there in this analytical part of our brain and think that that's the most important thing, when in fact, of course, we're very social. And because we're very social, we're very tribal. And it seems instinctually that it happens sometimes, and that means to say that we'll do it without thinking, that we'll favor our in-tribe and treat our outsiders with disdain. So just for a minute, think about this. Think about the last person that you thought badly of, or maybe you disparaged to somebody else. Think about that for just a second. Or maybe think of the last time you heard somebody disparaging somebody else. Was it a person who was one of your own? Was it an in-tribe person, or was it an outsider? It's extremely likely that it was an outsider, because we give ourselves the privilege of treating insiders well, and we give ourselves the permission to treat outsiders very, very badly. It's this human tendency that seems to go across the board in all cultures and throughout human history. So you're going to naturally want to be connected with a tribe of people that think like you and confirm what you already believe. This is called a confirmation bias. It's important to realize that you're going to want to confirm what you already believe is true. So there's a danger in this, because it means that you're not willing to see other points of view and other perspectives. You're going to just want to have what you believe already rubber stamped. So by doing this, we become blinded and we eliminate opportunities for learning and growth in our lives. So it's important to surround ourselves with, quote, outsiders, unquote. It's important to give ourselves new influences and new points of view so that we maintain empathy for, quote, outsiders, but also so that we realize that there are other points of view and there are always going to be new opportunities for growth and seeing things anew. So we don't want to put ourselves at this really ingrained disadvantage that sort of comes naturally to us, that we want to just say, yep, yep, you believe like I do, you're part of my tribe, you're confirming what I think. Because we crave stability, we crave this confirmation bias, because we don't want to be unmoored, we don't want to be destabilized, we want everybody to kind of rubber stamp what we think. It's not wrong that we do this. It's ultimately healthy in the sense that it creates stability, but we have to remember it has a really downside to it, a very kind of unsavory downside. And it takes away any ability for us to risk and learn and grow. So I have a little bit of homework for you, as I often do in Soul School. If you haven't heard too many Soul School episodes, I just encourage you to go back and listen to all of the Soul Schools that you can. I usually give out homework. So today, write yourself a little note about your craving to be stable. Just write this: what am I afraid of? And then today and all week, if you can, when you feel this tug for stability and safety, just check in with yourself. Just check in and pray about it if you can, and see what is behind that pressure to be stable and safe. What is behind that pressure that you might be afraid of? Are you stopping your own growth at all? And can you push past that fear? Can you be a little okay with a little less stability in favor of more growth? And what else could help you grow and still feel okay at the same time? Sometimes just knowing about yourself better gives you that added stability you need to push on and continue to grow. I'm going to actually work this out in more detail, in a concise way, in a more logical, concise way, and help you work through that in part two of this lesson. So you can get that information and material along with a video lesson for this lesson 25. Just go to sparkmymuse.com and you'll find lesson 25 extras, a video class, which is part of Varsity Club. So if you like this lesson and the topic, and you like Soul School in general, you're going to love what I create for part two of each lesson. These part two sections go all the way back to lesson 18. They come with video lessons, worksheets, and I introduce new topics, and I have a lot of extra goodies in there. As you are supporting the show as a Varsity Club member, you get access to all of that new material each week, and you can cancel at any time. It's just $5. It helps me put food on the table, and food is nice. I like food, and I could use your help. It helps support the show, and it means a lot to me that you would support the show. So thank you so much for listening today. I've noticed a really big increase in downloads on Wednesday. I wasn't sure if Soul School would work out, if anybody would even care. So I have you to thank. I'm so grateful to you for listening. If you want Soul School to grow and more people to hear this information and what I'm teaching and telling you, just pass it along to a friend so that we can grow it together. And I have one more thing to say, one more thing to ask you. If you enjoyed Soul School, I could use your help if you would take a minute and leave a review on iTunes. This helps other people find the show too. And that's about it for today. I hope you come back on Friday when I release a conversational episode with a featured guest. And of course, next Wednesday for another Soul School. I hope you enjoy your day, my friends. And once again, thank you so much for making this a part of your day.